live interview with Sir G. Rennie, 30th of November 1965.
I usually begin by asking people what made them join the colonial service.
Well, I was in the army in the 1914-18 war, and towards the end of my service there, I looked about for a job which would take me out into the open air a good deal, and also give me the chance to not only have worthwhile work, but also some games, playing games a good deal. And when I was successful in the examination for what they called in those days Eastern Cadetships, I had the opportunity of going to Ceylon, and I agreed to go.
Now, did Ceylon have any particular attractions?
Well, I knew the climate was reasonably good. It wasn't so far away from the United Kingdom as places like Hong Kong, for example.
It's not a telephone, is it?
Oh, yes. In Rhodesia.
Well, that was originally... what were your impressions of the civil service when you went out? Ceylon civil service.
Well, I thought it was a very good service, as it indeed was. And it gave a great variety of occupations, office work, magisterial work, circuit work, that is to say, out on tour in the districts, a great variety of country from places like Anuradhapura, where I first went to, to Neuralia, where I went to next, and then Batticolo, three entirely different places. And all were attractive in different ways, all gave good opportunities for work, and also for recreation. So I thoroughly enjoyed my day in Ceylon.
How did you take to the solitude in places like Anuradhapura and Batticolo?
Well, there wasn't really much solitude in Anuradhapura. We had, in addition to the government agent, we had two other civil service men in the office. And I was also given the job of looking after the police. And I used to play a great deal of football with the police. And that took up quite a bit of spare time. We even did a bit of travelling as a team. We went to Jaffna, I remember, on one occasion, to play the Jaffna piece.
Did you find that your public school life helped you in the colonial service?
Well, I wasn't at a public school. I went to a Scottish high school.
Oh, I didn't know you were Scottish by...
Yes, Scottish by education and birth.
My wife's Scottish.
Well, I went to Stirling High School.
By being Stirling.
And I had the honour, 2 or 3 years ago, of being asked to open a new high school at Stirling when they built a very fine new school.
What about military service? Did it help you in any way?
Oh, undoubtedly. In my later days in the army, I was on the staff, on the brigade staff, and got to know about the handling of papers, the filing of papers, the writing of letters, and administrative work generally, with the result that when I went out to Ceylon, I really carried on with the type of work that I had been familiar with, although of a different nature in many respects, but still I knew how to deal with papers.
As an officer assistant, did you find that you were treated as a dog's body?
No, I had plenty to do. In Anuradhapura, I on the circuit at times. Mr. Tyrrell, as he then was, the Graham Tyrrell, as he became later. And we had some very interesting trips together. In fact, on my first circuit, I remember, I shot a bear after he and I set up over a waterhole. And altogether, it was the most interesting tour of that. And then in Nuraria, where I went later, there were only two of the civil service in the office, the assistant government agent, myself. So there were plenty to do there of quite a responsible nature. And in Ballycloe, where I went later on, the office was a large one, and the office assistant had, again, a good job of work to do. I spent a lot of time going around the office, seeing what the clerks were doing, trying to improve their methods, and generally I found that work intensely interesting.
It was Mr. Tyrrell, in effect, who taught you your job.
Well, he was my first government agent, and I learned a lot from him, and also from the people who were in the office with me and with him. Sir Hilary Blood was one.
Yes, I have met him.
And the other one was Mr. De Valera, De Livera, Mr. De Livera, and one learned a lot from them. And then I had Mr. Woodman, first of all, as my assistant government agent when I went to Nuraria, who was a very knowledgeable, capable man. And at Ballycloe, of course, I had a very good government agent in Mr. C.B. Brain.
Yes, he was a, would you call him an initiator?
Yes, he was a man of great initiative and originality. He took a great deal of interest in land matters. And there I had plenty to do of in various types of work. I was I had to look after the police. I had to look after the prisons. I had various jobs connected with the rest houses, and so on. It was a life of great variety there and great interest.
Would it be true to say that in the civil service individuals preferred the administrative side to the judicial side?
It depended on the individual, I think. You had some people who were perhaps naturally good on the bench and preferred the bench to the office, as it were. I must admit I found the bench when I was a police magistrate, I found that work on the bench very interesting indeed. You got to know the people.
But didn't you see the worst side of the people?
Well, you saw a side that at times irritated you, because you knew quite definitely that when some of the witnesses came along, they weren't telling the truth.
Yes.
And then it was a case of trying to decide which side was nearer the truth in their statement of the case.
Yes. As an administrator, didn't these petitioners get you down?
The police?
The petitions.
Oh, the petitions. No, I don't think they did. They themselves were very tremendously, and some were obviously sincere, and had a justifiable complaint, and one did one's best to do something about them. Others were very trivial and were obviously, at times, greatly exaggerated, but sometimes too there was a grain of truth.
But didn't it take a great deal of your time?
Well, it was a part of one's job. A part of one's job, there.
No, I was wondering whether, well, a good proportion of them were really unnecessary, and whether you felt it was a sort of futile business.
Are you thinking of the written petition?
Yes, the written petition.
Yes. Well, in a good many cases, they dealt with matters that were of a source of much anxiety to the actual petitioner. It might be about a land dispute, in which case one referred it to the RM concerned, and one got the facts from him. In Ceylon, as a matter of fact, many of the disputes were land disputes, disputing the possession of a few coconut trees, which really were not worth the money that people spent on the actual litigation. But no, I think on the whole, the petitions one regarded as a very proper part of one's work, and if one could send an answer that was helpful, one was all the more pleased. Sometimes, of course, they asked the impossible, and it was not possible to meet their wishes, in which case one sent a reply that perhaps did not please them quite so much at the other end.
In your period, that's in the 1920s, did you would it be possible to say that this empirical British habit of sending young officers out into the country to learn for themselves still prevailed?
Well, even in the 1920s, the lines of procedure were pretty well laid down. One could do a certain amount of take the initiative, but in the ordinary way, one knew what had been done before, and unless one found that it could be improved upon, one regarded that as the normal method of procedure. But there still was room for initiative, as I found, especially with the police at Bedclough. One could move with the police there in a way that brought, in a sense, a new outlook to them. And certainly, I played games with the police in a way which gave them a tremendous amount of enthusiasm for football, a thing they hadn't had to the same extent before.
You said you learnt of these things in the ordinary way. What do you mean by the ordinary way? Through the GA?
Yes, through the... one would see replies going out to letters.
Mm-hmm.
One would see what the government agent replied to this type of petition or that, or how he dealt with a particular situation. And one naturally, in the course of business, acquired a knowledge of what the normal way of handling things was.
Yes, I see. What about out in the country on land matters and things? How do you find yourself facing new problems which the government agent hadn't spoken about?
Not very much. The government agent himself in Bedclough was very keen on land matters and took a great deal of interest in them. And I can't remember that I, as office assistant in Bedclough, dealt with land matters to any great extent. My job was to see if the office was an efficient, well-oiled organization, and I concentrated a good deal of my time on that, in addition to the prisons and this minute.
Mr. Stace, I think, has made a criticism that too often administration was routine and sometimes even blind routine.
Well, when you go to a new job, inevitably you deal with routine to a very large extent. When you check the box, for example, which is one of the jobs the office assistant did in the morning, it's very much routine and is not all that interesting, but it's a very necessary part of the business.
Yes, that is at the lower level. What about higher up? I mean, where people in power in the 1920s, did you feel that they tended to run in normal grooves rather than try and think up new ideas where relevant?
I think it depended a great deal on the man himself. Mm. If he felt that his job was boring, it showed, to my mind, that he wasn't really tackling it the right way.
Did you feel that there was something work, in this sense, uninterested in their work?
I didn't come across many of that sort. They all seemed to be interested in their work, but it may be that some were bored with certain aspects of work, mm-hmm. which didn't appeal to them as much as other aspects. I've found that people concentrate more on certain aspects of work than others, but as far as I was concerned, I can't think of one job that I had in Ceylon that was too much routine or boring.
Did you feel that when you tried to branch out on your own for a specific purpose, the provincial headquarters of Colombo tended to clamp down on it?
No. I think they welcomed initiative. I took a certain amount of initiative in all my jobs, really. And by and large, the initiative was usually welcomed, because people realize that perhaps a new mind coming in looks at things in a different way and sees possibilities of improvement that are worth following up.
Was there a tendency, however, to preserve the status quo?
You mean as regards the way of doing things?
Way of doing things, and also with regard to larger questions.
Well, it really depended a good deal what you're tackling, I think, mm-hmm. at the time. Some people perhaps are content with carrying on in the old way. I remember on one occasion in a colony that I went to, other than Ceylon, I suggested some way of doing things that hadn't been done before, and I got the answer, "Oh, we've always done that old way, sir. Why should we change it?" I said, "The fact that we've always done it is always a good enough reason to change in itself." But by and large, in Ceylon, I don't think it was a question of really regarding the old method as being sacrosanct and necessary to be followed all the time.
You didn't feel it so in Ceylon?
No.
That's good. With regard to an ultimate idea, wasn't there a lack of purpose and drive in British rule? When you first came in, did you feel that people were not asking why they were doing this? What I mean is, was efficiency made an end in itself?
Was which?
Efficiency made.
Well, efficiency was always there or thereabout. We certainly kept an eye on that all the time. But from the 20s on, one must remember that the people of the country were very much in the picture, mm-hmm. and working along with the people like myself who had come in from outside. I went to the medical department, for example, as administrative secretary in 1926. By that time, most of the officers in the medical department were Ceylonese. Uh-huh. Only one or two near the top who had come from outside. And that applied to a number of the professional departments. And in the administrative service, what we call the civil service, in the early 20s, there was a very high proportion of Ceylonese.
Wasn't there some sort of controversy or rather a discussion with regard to policy towards high employment of Ceylonese? I thought it was an issue in the early 20s.
One didn't, at my level in those days, I didn't come across that very much. There may have been a discussion perhaps in the late 20s or in the 30s about the rate of, as they called it, Ceylonization. administrative service proper. But in the medical department, you had a very high proportion of Sudanese in the trenches. In some of the technical departments, the same way, although there again, it was a question of availability of bodies. Some types of work appeal more to the young Sudanese than others. And the law and medicine attracted a number.
Not many into irrigation.
Not many to irrigation, not many perhaps to survey work, not many to engineering. So you had some professions where the proportion of Sudanese was very high, and others where it wasn't so high. And in the civil service proper, let's say the administrative service, there was a very good proportion of Sudanese, and the policy was to increase that proportion all the time, although there may have been some argument about it in the 30s.
I know that in the 1920s there was feeling among the Sudanese that in the civil service proper, this is, that they were not being given the higher administrative posts, especially not being raised to GA ships.
Well, I don't know about that. Many of them were actually in that sort of seniority at that time. If one looks at this, at the civil list, there aren't many Sudanese names of the seniority that would take them into the GA ship.
Yes, I see. Well, the first AGA was in 1923, as far as I know. Well, this would apply in the late, by the late 1920s, I suppose some would have been eligible for GA ships. There was this feeling, I was wondering how far it was true.
Yeah, I hadn't come across it myself.
And I have read something by Bowles, Freddy Bowles.
Yes.
He was against the high employment of Sudanese, at least he wanted it on a very limited basis. And he argued that the stability of government would be affected. Because the Sudanese wouldn't be independent of local politics. Would you comment on that view? This was his individual viewpoint.
Yes, well, I don't know how much he was arguing from factual knowledge or from probabilities. In other words, I don't know whether he had actual instances of politicians trying to interfere. And in the circumstances, I don't know whether his fears, in other words, were well-based or whether they were presumptions.
Well, I think he cited one case, but you can always take an exception and cite him. I'm not sure, I don't know whether it was an exception or whether it was a rule.
Yes, I don't know. What years was he speaking about? The 20s?
Well, he was writing in 1923, but presumably he's drawing from earlier experience.
Yes, yes. Well, in by 1923, there weren't many Sudanese who, so far as the administrative service was concerned, were of sufficient seniority to go into high post. I mean, the civil list that I'm looking at now makes that fairly clear.
Well, Bowles on the whole strikes me as being a cynic. And I was wondering how far cynicism prevailed in the civil service.
Well, I, in 23, hadn't really come into it much. I hadn't been in Colombo. I was still in the outstation then, and that point had not really come up.
One other sphere of Khan Sabha and the village headman. Did you have any experience of working in this village council?
No, no. One met the president on occasion when one went out on the circuit. But I saw very little of the actual working of the council.
Did you have to, in the judicial field, did you have to supervise the decisions of these Khan Sabha courts?
So far as I remember, it'd be a case of doing that only if appeals came in to the government agent.
Okay.
Now, whether the government agent went through the record of the court when he was on circuit, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I came very little into contact with the court because I was never an assistant government agent myself.
Yes, I
went straight onto the bench after Bettaclo. From there, after a very short time, again as an office assistant in Lahore, I went into the medical department on the administrative side.
Yes, I see.
And I, from there into the treasury, from there into the governor's office, and I was never an assistant government agent, so my knowledge of work in the district is not as comprehensive as it might be.
What about these headmen you had to deal with in Bettaclo? Did you find them useful?
Oh, they had their part to play in the administration, and so far as I remember, they got on with that pretty well. I remember in Bettaclo, I was a bit worried about the number of unlicensed dogs, for example. Dogs were supposed to be licensed. We found a very large number of unlicensed dogs, and I tried to get the headman to take a greater interest in the work and license more dogs. One had an occasional drive of that sort to keep things moving in the right direction.
What about corruption? They were supposed to be corrupt, but I was wondering whether...
So far as Bettaclo and Rajapura and Euralia was concerned, I can't remember any cases of corruption. In the medical department, I had occasionally to deal with cases of dishonest misappropriation of funds by what we called apothecaries,
mm-hmm.
in charge of dispensaries, and in a number of cases we actually had to prosecute them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember any cases in the early days in my service at the three places I just mentioned.
Yes, I see. When you were on the bench in Chelau and Dandagamwa, did you feel that the legal procedure was too formal and too sophisticated for most of the people?
No, they seemed to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
They very often hired proctors, of course, and at times when they felt they could afford it, they hired advocates who came, for example, from Colombo to Chelau.
Wasn't it rather expensive for the villager, really?
It undoubtedly was when he thought the case of sufficient importance to get an advocate. That cost him a lot of money.
Yes, but what about the stamp fees? Do you think they were necessary?
I don't remember what they were.
Well, there were some fees, but yes. I don't know the exact amount. But
well, anyhow, they didn't seem to deter the litigants because they took cases about the time the most petty disputes,
mm-hmm.
of a civil nature.
Would you say the people had a rather litigious nature?
Yes, mm-hmm. definitely. They enjoyed it. It was a part of their life, and I felt at times they could have settled a case amongst themselves. Instead of doing that, they went to court and brought their relatives and friends in large numbers, sometimes to support them, with stories that one could see were not altogether truthful.
would you also provide some comments on the medical services that you found there?
The medical services, I thought, were good. We had devoted medical officers. We had pretty good hospitals on the whole. And the medical department, I thought, both on the so-called medical side and the so-called sanitary side, was a well-run organization and of great benefit to the people, if I remember rightly.